back in session.
Go ahead and be seated. Good morning. All right, next case on our calendar is docket number 55429, Parenthood, Nevada versus Bristol. Counsel, are we ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, and Mr. Peters, would you like to reserve a little time?
4 minutes, please.
Okay.
May it please the court. Pursuant to appellate rules, I'm obligated to make a fair statement of the case, which I'd like to do by starting off. And that, to me, it's more of a procedural aspect. First of all, the appellants filed their initiative petition with the Secretary of State on October 21st, 2009. Initiative petition states that in the great state of Nevada, the term person applies to every human being. The opponents timely filed a challenge to the personhood initiative petition on November 12, 2009, asking that the initiative be held invalid and enjoined from being placed on the November election ballot. A briefing schedule was set, an argument held in the Carson City District Court with Judge Russell on January 8, 2010. The judge filed his decision on 21st, ruling in favor of the respondents, and issued an injunction directing the Secretary of State to prohibit the personhood initiative from being allowed on the ballot for the November election. An appeal to this court was timely taken on February 11, 2010. Let me first address some of the basic rules I believe that are applicable in reviewing this case. First of all, this is a de novo review, I believe, of both the law and the facts for the court to consider in rendering its decision. Secondly, it's the opponent's burden of proof to show that the personhood's initiative petition should not be allowed on the ballot. Third, the court is confined to its on-its-face inquiry and review to determine the primary subject that we have in the petition. Fourth, the description of effect need not be perfectly written, but must be adequately written. Fifth, and finally, this court must make every effort to sustain and preserve the people's constitutional right to amend their constitution through the initiative process. Now, turning to a little more background here. The personhood initiative is really a civil rights initiative. And what do I mean by civil rights initiative? This is an initiative that goes to the heart of who we are as human beings and the rights attached to that. And it's through this initiative that we hope to level the playing field legally between person and human being. Prior Nevada cases interpreting the statute have all dealt with slivers of Nevada law. However, the personhood initiative, being a civil rights major, should be appreciated as such. This is the trap the district court fell into in rendering its decision, in that it failed to appreciate the fact that this is a civil rights initiative. And that's why the use of the 13th Amendment, the federal 13th Amendment abolishing slavery, and the Nevada Marriage Amendment analogies are important guidelines to assist this court in rendering its decision. Now, why must the district court ruling be reversed? One need look no further than the first finding of fact, which is the first finding in the order. And in doing that, we need to apply the Herbst Gaming case. Herbst Gaming case, in essence, told us what issues not to look at and apply at this stage in the initiative proceeding. First of all, it said, we shall not consider nor argue substantive constitutional issues. And it ruled that you are not to give advisory opinions in regard to what may, should, or occur if this issue is enacted. With that in mind, we need to apply this to the first finding, because I submit this is the only finding of fact, and if this finding of fact falls, then all the legal findings below also fall because there's no other factual basis to sustain it. In the first finding, the court said that the personhood initiative impacts multiple unrelated provisions of Nevada's constitution and law, including, but not limited to, the constitutional rights of life, due process, court protection, and search and seizure. It's as if the district court took this clause out of Herbst Gaming and did just the opposite, I would submit, Your Honor. Because these are the very issues that Herbst Gaming prohibits us from looking at. Now, if you argue that they have not, they did not make a substantive argument, then I would counter that, in fact, this is another advisory opinion that I'll address next. In either event, this finding of fact goes beyond this stage and goes to post-enactment issues that are not allowed to be considered at this stage. The further finding, it says the court stated that it is a very complex and broad initiative. Complex and broad, I submit, is an advisory opinion, very broad and general advisory opinion, but one that's void, that's hypothetical, not based upon any facts that we have before the court. Furthermore, the court stated
why can't the district court, in conducting its single subject evaluation of an initiative petition, examine its purpose and weigh it against other purposes or other impacts on our laws?
Can it do that? Or
why can't the district court, in conducting a single subject evaluation, evaluate the impacts on other laws that the initiative may deviate from its stated purpose?
Because case law holds, Your Honor, that you're limited to on its face review when it comes to determining the single subject, plus the arguments of proponents and counsel in deciding the single subject. And if you consider...
Well, your argument was that under Herbst, this court has said that you cannot reach the constitutionality of a particular proposed initiative petition. Isn't there a difference between reaching the constitutionality of a proposed initiative and determining whether the initiative violates the single subject rule because it impacts other provisions in our laws beyond the stated purpose of the initiative?
I would submit that you then go off into post-enactment issues again, which are prohibited, because you're giving advisory opinions, if not dealing with substantive constitutional issues, and still prohibited.
Doesn't that conflict with the single subject evaluation?
No, Your Honor, you're limited in looking at the eight operative words in determining the single subject, because it's on its face analysis. Because first of all, case law has stated that you first of all determine the primary purpose. The primary purpose is looked at and found by number one, reading the initiative language, number two, looking at the description of effect, and three, proponents' arguments. In this case, I submit that you can look strictly only at the initiative language and come up with the single subject that you need to go to the next step.
What is proponents' primary purpose of this initiative?
The primary purpose is to extend the meaning of the word person as found in the Nevada Constitution. That's a succinct statement. Now, we've also given more elaborate ones in the brief, but that's a succinct one that I believe if all you look at is the initiative language, that's all you. That's a very concise statement of what the primary purpose is.
Counsel, I know that you still are in your single subject analysis, but are you going to reach in the time remaining your description of effect argument?
Yes. And then let's go to that and skip some of the other stuff. In the single subject, I think I have laid out the analysis for the first step, determining the primary subject and what you have to do to do it. Once you determine the primary subject, then the next thing is you have to look at each part of the initiative. In this case, it's simple because we have only one part. And that's what tends to confuse the analysis going on here, because every other initiative that we have that's been subject to NRS 295.009 has involved multiple sections. So therefore, the single subject, you look at the eight words. And in the second part, you determine if each part, and this is where things are short-circuited, each part is functionally related and germane to, one, the general subject of the initiative, and two, the interest likely affected. I submit that the general subject, again, is extending the meaning of the word person as used in the Nevada Constitution, and the interest likely affected by the initiative is the fact that we're adding the term human being to the word person in the Nevada Constitution. In regard to the description of effect, case law.
So what you're saying is that the district court cannot consider, for example, whether that constitutional amendment would affect the use of the term person in the context of corporation, for example.
Not at this stage of the proceeding. I believe that would be clearly a post-enactment issue. And in fact, there may be many post-enactment issues like that that would be brought up. But at this
and
stage,
that gets
no.
back to my earlier question. The court, in conducting that evaluation, isn't deciding the question whether it is constitutional or unconstitutional. It's simply examining whether there is a single subject rule violation because the language impacts other areas of the law, which go beyond the stated purpose on the face.
And that's where you get into an advisory opinion, Your Honor. When you start going in that direction, you have to render advisory opinions. For instance,
I don't think it's an advisory opinion to say that a certain sentence impacts more than one area beyond the stated purpose. That's what the court's function is to determine that, isn't it?
Not at this stage, Your Honor. I would submit that at this stage, it's simply to do the analysis that I've
outlined. Well, didn't this court in Pistol evaluate the eminent domain initiative petition, arrive at the conclusion as to what was functionally related and germane to that petition, and by severance strike down certain portions because it evaluated that they were outside the single subject rule?
Yes, Your Honor, they did. And the explanation of that is, if you look at the Hertz Gaming case and the Nevadans case, they were decided on the same day. And the Nevadans case addressed the constitutional substantive issues only and ignored the advisory opinion part. And in that case, the Nevadans case itself, you had the property rights issue. There was 14 sections. The court did its analysis and found that in one clause, the eighth section, that a phrase was overly broad, government action, and said that that could apply to other myriad of issues. I would submit today that the court, if it were faced with the proper application of Hurst to that case, would instead stop there and say we have multiple subjects and not have to go there and apply it beyond the myriad of subjects that it states. Because Hurst Gaming, it was the bright star test that the court outlined.
Mr. Peters, is it your position that we should just let everything in? With no limitations, so that the voters don't know what they're voting on eventually?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Absolutely not.
By what is here in this initiative, does it fully inform the voters ultimately as to what they're voting on, what they're amending the Constitution, or is it so open-ended that you're not sure what it really means?
Yeah.
I understand the intent that you put forth, but does that clearly indicate that?
Yes, Your Honor, it does, because as a civil rights initiative, and this is where the analogy to other civil rights initiatives is important. Look at the Federal Amendment, 13th Amendment, to abolishing slavery. What was the wording of that?
The question, Mr. Peters, is did we really need it from the clear language put forth in the Constitution? The question from this is the clear language that we have here, is it that clear? As we get into human genome, what the average person knows that to be, or do they know that to be? Reproduction methods, we're talking about, in essence, you're asking us to define when life begins. Does it do that? Is it clear in all cases?
We are not asking to define when life begins, because in the description of effect, it does define human being and when life begins. At the beginning of biological development.
Your Honor, Mr. Peters, just for my purposes, what does human genome mean?
Human genetics. That's the best description I could give, the genetics of our genetic makeup.
And so when we talk about reproduction method, are we talking about petri dishes? Are we talking about test tubes besides the normal way of conception?
Yes, there are a variety of reproduction methods now.
But that affects stem cell, for instance, or not? Do we even know?
We don't. We'll find out if it's enacted, because that's one of the post-enactment issues that will be addressed, but not at this stage.
All right, Mr. Peters, you actually chewed up all your time. We asked you a few questions, so I'm going to give you 2 minutes in rebuttal.
2 minutes?
Yeah, you chewed up all of your time, but I'm going to give you some additional time because we were asking you questions.
Thank you, Your
Honor. All right.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, for the record, my name is Lee Rowland, and I'm here representing the respondents today. We are here to ask you to affirm the District Court's holding that the initiative here does indeed violate the single subject rule. And I will just start by responding to a few things that Mr. Peters brought up that I think we take issue with. First and foremost, Mr. Peters repeated on a number of occasions that we have to gauge the initiative on its face. And I think there's an inherent conflict here between what is in the text of this initiative and what is in the description of effect, and how much it's proper for us and the court to rely on that description of effect. In the holding below, the district court did not, while it issued in its findings that the description of effect was materially misleading and basically dealt with substance that was outside of the text, he also held that he did not need to reach it because he ordered the Secretary of State not to place this on the ballot. So he essentially held in his order that while he found it misleading, he did not have to reach it in order to restructure it because it was not severable, and it was not possible for him to order that description of effect to be restructured in a way that could kind of save the excessive generality that he believed occurred on the face of the initiative itself. And I think that is the real struggle that we have in this case, which is that this initiative in some ways is unlike any initiative that this court has examined because of the incredibly general and vague language that it chooses to use. And proponents, indeed, have acknowledged that. On page one of their brief before this court, they say that the primary purpose of this initiative is to extend the meaning of person, as used in Nevada Constitution, to include human being, as explained in the description of effect. So essentially what the proponents have done here is they've used the description of effect as a codicil. They've appended it to give meaning that does not appear in the text. And we submit to you that that is an abuse of the initiative process and is improper here, where the lower court already ruled that that description of effect was materially misleading. The problem with that approach is that the description of effect itself does not, of course, get inserted into the Constitution. It is not a change that's being made to the law. It is a description that is only statutorily required to be on that petition gathering sheet to let people know whether or not they should add their signature to this particular petition. It does not substitute for the meaning, for the intent, for the material consequences of the text of the initiative itself. And we are kind of slippery sands here, because the proponents say, well, you can only look at it on its face, but because that wording is so broad, and because the terms person and human being are commonly understood to be the same thing, they have acknowledged that the only way to give voters notice of what that means is to say, as we describe in the description of effect. We don't believe that's proper use of the initiative process, because what that doesn't do is give voters the notice of what the material consequences and subjects this initiative addressed, as NRS 295 requires. That is the purpose of these statutory requirements.
Ms. Rowland, can I ask you this? I believe what Mr. Peters' argument was that in citing Herbst Gaming, which was the smoking case where we allowed the smoking initiative to stay on the ballot, why don't we just let it stay on the ballot, and then you would certainly have a right to challenge it even if it passed with the voters on this. What warrants us our intervention at this time?
Well, I think there's no doubt that there's a broad right to access the ballot, and I would not contend that. We have never contended that. Nor have we ever made an argument in this case that we should be substantively reviewing the provisions as Herbst Gaming prohibits. We've never argued that, and Judge Russell, the district court, did not I don't believe ran afoul of that in any way. He was simply trying to give the proponents benefit of the doubt by finding a single subject, and in doing so, taking their description of effect at their word. In that description of effect, they list literally, you know, several constitutional provisions it's affecting without giving weight to that. But I think perhaps the better answer is that what this process is about is giving notice to the voters so that they can participate meaningfully in their initiative process. This is a power that's reserved to the people, and it is absolutely a strong one. But the right to access the ballot, as this court knows better than anyone, is not absolute. And it is absolutely accompanied by a duty to make sure that the voters can participate in this process in an informed manner, understanding the subject that they're being presented with. And I think the problem here is that right now we're basically saying one word includes another word, neither of which have a precise definition, by two medical experts who dueled in the district court in 60 pages of affidavits, let alone the average Nevadan voter. And so while there's no doubt that they could get on the ballot and accomplish some of their goals, I think they have a duty to make sure they do that in a specific enough way that it actually delineates the changes and the topics they're trying to address for the voters.
But how do you address counsel's argument that in Herbst we said we will examine these conflicts post-election? The pre-election evaluation has been narrowed by this court in Herbst by saying we're going to examine these questions if it passes, in effect. And we have limited pre-election evaluations to procedural compliance of the process and to single subject violations. How does this simple sentence violate the single subject rule?
I think the district court was correct in its finding that what it was doing was going by the book and following the rules as laid forth in this court. To briefly address the timing of Herbst and Nevada for the Protection of Property Rights, the fact that they came out the same day, it might be helpful for the court to look at the Las Vegas taxpayers case. That came out in 2009, less than a year ago, and it really reproduces all of the analysis in the Nevadans for Protections of Property Rights in terms of looking at what are the material consequences of this. We have to have some firm ground under our feet in order to engage in the statutory analysis that's required by the single subject rule. I don't believe that the district court in this case ran afoul of that in any way. What he literally did was look at the text of the initiative. He said, there's no limiting language here. It says in the great state of Nevada, I will look to the proponent's briefs and arguments. There was quite a bit of testimony on the record before him. I will look to the description of effect, which they have kind of formally appended to the text, which, as we have argued, we do not think is proper. But again, I think giving them the benefit of the doubt, he looked at all those arguments, and there was a lot of inconsistency there. And above and beyond that, again, he had a lot of factual evidence before him from these two medical experts who said, human being doesn't have a precise definition, and in the common lingo, doesn't really differ in any material way from person. So while I don't disagree that the initiative process is robust, that right can only expand up and to the point that the voters have meaningful notice and are part of this process. That is clearly what Herbst Gaming stands for. That's clearly what the property rights case stands for. And again, it was reiterated in the taxpayer case. So I think that the analysis that Judge Russell engaged in was precisely the proper analysis that this court has dictated time and time again. He is not, as the Herbst court said you cannot do, applying this initiative to a hypothetical set of facts. He's not saying, does this apply to a motel room? I'm going to interpret this and figure out what it does in a certain factual situation. That's not what the judge here did. Instead, what he did is he looked literally to the text. He looked to the language of the initiative and said, how broad is this? And can we encompass this under one primary purpose so that it does meet the mandates of this single subject rule? And I think he clearly found, after the evidence before him, that it was simply not possible in this case because of the excessively broad and general language used in what is literally six words. And
I'd like to have you address the question I asked.
Okay.
Under the judge's order or in your advocacy, how does this simple sentence violate the single subject rule on its face?
On its face, because there is no determinable primary purpose, which is the first prong of the single subject analysis as this court had laid out. And so they may be able to compress it into six words. But I think that when we're talking about an initiative process that is supposed to inform the voters of what they're being asked to vote on without a committee hearing, without discussion, but just an up or down, there needs to be some information in there that lets the voters know what's going on. And these six words totally fail to do that. I think the broader question would be, to use an analogy, could we have an initiative that says, we're going to replace the word pink with red, as explained in the description of effect. And then the description of effect says, well, this is really about is abortion and birth control. I think that would be improper. That would be six words. You could argue there was a primary purpose about changing the color. And that's essentially where we are here. They said there's a primary purpose. There's only six words. We're just using person to encompass human being. But nobody agrees on what that means. And allowing that to go through simply because of its brevity, I think creates a very real danger for the citizens of Nevada, which is that the initiative process starts being used for essentially vague, semantic, or theoretical ideas that have no real clarity about how they're changing the laws in the society that we live in. And what that opens up the possibility to, I think, is post-enactment judicial review, precisely what the proponents are suggesting, where the courts can retroactively give intent to an initiative that the voters never intended and never had notice of. The initiative process has to succinctly and straightforwardly explain a change to the law. This does not do that. It simply has some theoretical definitional terms that are only fleshed out and only have meaning once you read the misleading description of effect. So while I understand we're dealing with a short number of words here, it's clear that those words violate the prohibition on excessively general primary purposes, that they do not encompass a primary purpose, because once you look to the codicil that proponents direct you to, that description of effect mentions several fundamental constitutional rights and other issues such as the elderly and infirm that I think no one, no voter, would have notice of from those six.
So your argument is that the sentence encompasses more than a single subject?
Absolutely not. And that's what the district court found, and we believe they were correct in holding that. And the single subject rule is not simply a limitation that it have, you know, one sentence or that it have a certain number of words. It's that there is a discernible primary purpose and that the fundamental changes that are enacted by that initiative relate to it. And the district court here was basically completely at sea. After a bunch of testimony, after affidavits on the record, he was still unable to determine what that primary purpose was. Proponents' arguments changed about that from time to time. So frankly, I'm not sure that he even reached the issue of how many parts.
Well, what's the basis of the district court saying that this sentence impacts the search and seizure laws of our state or our state's criminal laws?
I would certainly hesitate to put any words in the judge's mouth, Your Honor, but my sense is that the testimony and the affidavits related quite extensively to issues of basically search and seizure, about how much right a fetus would have or a fertilized cell would have independent of the pregnant woman who was carrying it. And so the question, there was some testimony about criminal laws being applied to women being forcibly taken to hospitals when they were, say, choosing a home birth and instead were brought into a hospital and forcibly made to give birth. I believe that that was probably the testimony that was reflected in that part of his opinion. That would be my best guess. And as far as the other constitutional rights, they are all laid out. Life, liberty, property, due process, says everyone has a fundamental right to due process. It engages the elderly, the infirm, conscious or unconscious. All of this is written by proponents in their description of the facts. So I think that's where he really began to see the breadth of their intent here. And his order focused on their intent more so than any kind of review of specific factual circumstances as prohibited in Herbst. He was trying to figure out, what are proponents trying to do? What is their intent? And time again, proponents said this was not just limited to the beginning of life. This is not just about abortion or fetuses. It's not about that. It's about this broad issue of what a person is at the end of life, whether you're sick or healthy, and nowhere were they able to really articulate why that reflected a change in the law or how those purposes were related to the primary purpose that he could discern or actually could not discern from the text of the initiative. So that's my guess as to what was structured that holding.
Well, what's wrong with an amendment to the Constitution that affects both a fetus and the elderly?
I think that would be a question of log rolling. I think unless it could succinctly be put forward in the description of effect so that the voters had notice, which of course is again the underlying purpose.
Well, suppose an initiative is proffered that says this, I'm going to amend the budget of the state of Nevada and impose six different taxes. Anything wrong with that? Does that violate the single subject rule?
I think it would certainly be a lot closer to meeting those strictures. I don't think the single subject rule says you cannot affect a lot of parts, you can't do a lot of things. It doesn't say that, and we've never argued that. What it says is that no matter how broad or narrow those changes, they have to fit under a single primary purpose. And here proponents have failed to identify one or provide evidence to the court that allowed the court to identify one.
Ms. Rowland, how would you answer this question? I propose an initiative that doubles the penalties for child sexual offenders, but in the initiative it abolishes the death penalty, and it's called criminal sentencing. That's the nexus. That's all it is. It's criminal procedure. Criminal. Right. Does that violate the single subject, or is that log rolling?
I believe that would be log rolling, Your Honor. Okay. And again, it's a hypothetical set of facts. I think the devil is in the details of these cases, but I think absolutely the prohibition on log rolling that this court was so concerned with in taxpayer, I would say that redevelopment projects and city lease contracts are probably pretty close for a lot of people in their mind. I think the death penalty and increasing sentences are not. So if I was going on the test laid forward in taxpayer, I would say yes, under that set of facts, that would violate the prohibition on log rolling. And I would argue that everything listed in the description of effect in this particular initiative, again, it's not even in the text. So it doesn't even give voters notice. It doesn't go into the law. It allows for post-enactment guesses at voter intent. Everything they have listed involves hot-button critical social issues. We all know why there's a lot of interest in this case, because that's what's at stake. And yet they have not allowed the voters enough information to make those critical choices.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Is there any other questions from my colleagues? All right. Yes. Thank you. Mr. Peters, you got a couple minutes to sum up.
Thank you. Just to say that you have a question that wasn't addressed before our show.
I wanted to give you a cue that you were running out of time and that you might want to get to the description.
Thank you. Okay. The term human being is self-explanatory from the scientific and legal perspective. And what opponents would have us do is add on meanings, add on words, and after a while, it goes from being a civil rights initiative to a narrow, focused matter, and then we're attacked because we have too many subjects. This is why it was written this way. And we all know that from the abortion standpoint, this will close the gap. It will extend the meaning of human being back to a prenatal child to the time of his or her life when it begins. And that is the major import of this initiative. It will, as Roe versus Wade said, the term person does not apply to a prenatal child. We want to close that gap. That is the primary.
So that is in response to her statement that there was no determinable primary purpose. This is your primary purpose.
Not sole purpose, but primary. With human being goes to the full spectrum, but yes. On the other end, the elderly and stuff, we are anticipating attacks in the future as to assisted suicide, and the list could go on. And so it's preemptive to expand it to the full spectrum of a human being from the beginning of life until death. I would like to close by saying that if you allow the district court's ruling below to stand, appellants could never write a civil rights initiative that would conform to that district court's improper order. The appellants would be forced to explain post-enactment ramifications in 200 words, an impossible task. The same fate would befall any other civil rights initiative brought under NRS 295.009 if we stick with the district court opinion. Is it de novo review? I'm asking you to review this and apply the correct standard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Peters. Colleagues, any questions? All right. Thank you both for the outstanding briefs and the arguments. And this matter will stand submitted. The court will stand in recess.